This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the Islamic State publishes photos of Palmyra temple destruction. Global financial markets calm down a bit. Europe steps up security after France train attack.
This is the first time I see this kind of increase of security. It used to be like that. They will leave you on your own, and then they don't even know who are in the train.
A British pop diva comes out with something new. These and other stories just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Photos posted online by the Islamic State group claim to show the destruction of a 2,000-year-old temple at the Syrian World Heritage Site of Palmyra earlier this week. In a series of images displayed Tuesday, several men are carrying barrels into the Roman-era Baal Shamin Temple, lining the base and placing the containers connected by blue wire on columns. Other photos show a cloud of smoke and debris and dust-covered hunks of rubble, presumably in the aftermath of Sunday's explosion. The Islamic State group considers such artifacts that predate Islam as symbols of paganism. UNESCO called the temple's destruction a war crime. It follows last week's beheading of Khalid al-Assad, the 82-year-old archaeologist and former head of antiquities in Palmyra, who spent decades preserving the site. Trinity University Syria specialist David Lesh visited Palmyra many times. He told International Edition's Victor Beatty the destruction of the temple is a tragedy, but not unexpected.
It's not surprising. In fact, I'm surprised it took so long for the Islamic State to blow it up, because it's been their modus operandi to destroy any sort of references to polytheism or pre-Islamic religious belief. So this, unfortunately, is not surprising. You know, it's part of their raison d'etre in terms of making the headlines. If they're not in the headlines for a certain amount of time, they'll do something spectacular, blow up something, or unfortunately behead some people and record it and put it over the social media, and it goes the world over. And for some psychological reason I don't quite understand, it's good for their recruiting. It feeds into the anger of various youth across the world, and they come flocking to this sort of thing.
You've been to Palmyra many times. What is the historical context of this temple? What does this loss represent?
Palmyra was built as a Roman entrepot, a trade way station that reached its height in the 200s CE. And it's one of the great archaeological sites in the world because it was based on Roman architecture. It is essentially a Roman city built in the early years of the Common Era. And yet, since it was in the middle of the desert, the city is basically as it was back then. It's been restored somewhat over the centuries, and particularly by the Syrian government over the last 30, 40 years, as tourism picked up in the country of Syria. But in most cities where there were Roman ruins, there were cities built on top of that, and they usually destroyed many of the Roman ruins to build the new cities, to build the new buildings. They used the stones, they broke them down. Even in Rome itself, it happened quite frequently. Palmyra is one of the few and only examples where it was not broken down, because a new city really wasn't built on top of it. And so when you arrive at Palmyra, the most spectacular sight is that you see the whole city planning. You see the whole city as it was back then, essentially in terms of how it looked, you know, the main streets, the markets, the houses, and so forth. Even though the buildings themselves, for the most part, are obviously in ruined state, but as far as the whole city architecture and planning, it is as it was 2,000 years ago. And if they destroy much more, and unfortunately I suspect they probably will at some point, it would be just such a tremendous loss, archaeologically speaking.
The current head of the Antiquities Department in Syria, Mahmoud Abdul Karim, said the international community must act. There must be some plan. Quote, "I am not a politician or a military man, but in my personal conviction for the exceptional value of Palmyra, I call upon the international community and all those who are involved in this subject to fight against terrorism. They must move quickly to liberate the city by all means. Otherwise, the international community will lose a beloved city," since it's listed on the World Heritage List. Do you think anyone will answer that call?
No, not at all. You know, most of the international community has not acted in force to save the Syrian people. So why would we act in terms of saving a few more ruins that exist? Unfortunately, we'll go a call that is unheeded. But frankly speaking, if we're going to intervene, we need to intervene in other places.
Trinity University Syria Specialist David Lesh speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Time now to check out what people are saying about the incident in Palmyra on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to tell us about what people are tweeting. Hi, G.
Hi, Ray. I went on to the Topsy Analytics website to see how many times hashtag Palmyra was used in tweets during the last 24 hours. It was used nearly 3,000 times in English and around 2,800 times in Arabic.
Oh, those are some very interesting numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So not an overwhelming number, though, of tweets on Palmyra. And why is that?
Ray, first of all, this is not the first attack on Palmyra by ISIL. The Syria specialist also mentioned this in the Q&A, that the group killed a renowned academic last week who worked on preserving Palmyra for more than 50 years. That news made headlines around the globe. Also, burning down a UNESCO World Heritage site is obviously a horrific act, but the silver lining here is that no one got hurt. So those two might be the reasons why hashtag Palmyra is not being used too often.
And what about some handles that are tweeting about it?
The State Department's International Organization Affairs Bureau condemned the act. It tweeted, "Horrified by ISIL's continued destruction of ruins, including the UNESCO World Heritage Site in Palmyra." The Bureau is on Twitter at state_IO. The Office of the Spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, also criticized the latest move by ISIL. It's on Twitter at UN_spokesperson and tweeted, "UNSG Ban Ki-moon, appalled by Daesh demolition of Palmyra Temple in Syria, says this war crime must be prosecuted." Daesh, as you know, is yet another term for the Islamic State. Ray?
Thanks for the update, social media reporter G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's spelled JEEABBEYLEE. And you can also comment on our website at www.voanews.com. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Global markets recovered some of their recent losses Tuesday as stock prices rose after Chinese authorities took action to stimulate their weakening economy. China's central bank cut interest rates 0.25% and told banks they could hold less money in reserve. The moves make it easier for consumers to buy products and companies to build factories and hire people. The action reassured investors who bid up European stocks. U.S. stocks recovered, but then went the other way, faltering with the Dow Jones Industrials Average, finishing at 1.3% down. Sam Stovall, equities strategist for S&P Capital IQ, spoke from New York with International Edition's Peter Heinlein about the volatility and the prospects for even more.
Well, I think that we are
going through what's called a counter-trend rally right now. The market is oversold, and I think like a stretched rubber band, it's simply snapping back right now as investors try to reevaluate what caused them to be worried and whether that worry has now dissipated. I don't think it really has. I think we have to reevaluate whether global economic growth is indeed slowing. And is it slowing to the point where we fall into recession or just slowing? And I think that's what investors are focusing on. We'll probably end up remaining within the 10 to 20% decline and not fall into a new bear market.
Well, why is it declining?
Well, I think it's declining primarily because we're just very long into this economic expansion, certainly in the U.S. The stock market itself is 6.5 years old. We've only had two times in which the market reached its seventh birthday since World War II. I think what we're finding is that, yes, employment trends are getting a little bit better here in the States, but the payroll numbers, the actual earnings, are not rising dramatically. And as a result, we just don't seem to have the same kind of demand that we did usually at the beginning of a new economic expansion.
Are we going to see great peaks, highs, and lows coming like they've been the last few days? Can we expect that for the foreseeable future?
Well, maybe not a 1,000-point decline in the Dow Jones Industrial Average that we saw on Monday, August 24th. But volatility in excess of 1% per day, yes, I think that's certainly something we should be prepared for. August is the second most volatile month of the year. And guess which one is the most volatile? That's the one we're heading into, which is September. So I would tell investors, be prepared for additional volatility, fasten your safety belt, but don't don your parachute and assemble by the door. Don't be your portfolio's worst enemy and start selling, because you'll probably do so at the bottom.
Are we then in for a recession, either here in the United States or possibly globally?
I don't think globally, and I don't think a recession in the U.S. either. I think we're going to be continuing to see below-trend growth of about 2 to 2.5%. I think that what makes me feel good that we will not end up in a new recession is housing. In particular, housing starts. In 7 of the last 8 recessions, we have seen a 30% decline in housing starts, whereas right now we're actually looking at a fairly substantial gain in housing starts. Also, the difference between the yield, the interest rate offered on a long bond versus the interest rate that's offered on a 3-month treasury bill is still fairly wide.
So what's your advice to Ma and Pa investor?
My advice to Ma and Pa investor is to just sit on your hands. Don't do anything that you will regret as it relates to your portfolio. You don't have to buy today. You can sit on the sidelines, wait for the dust to settle. But I would certainly say don't sell, because 90% of all declines in excess of 5% turned around before hitting the 20% decline level and ended up getting back to break even in an average of only about 4 months.
That was Sam Stovall, equities strategist for S&P Capital IQ in New York, speaking with International Edition's Peter Heinlein. Every day, the huge migrations from both North Africa and the Middle East are streaming toward Europe, which has to decide how best to deal with this massive human wave. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Joost Hilterman, the program director for the Middle East and North Africa for the International Crisis Group. He says Europe is struggling to come up with a unified approach for dealing with a migration crisis.
Clearly, the European Union is in a total panic, and partly because refugees landing on its shores, which it prefers to call migrants, and secondly, because the European Union is internally terribly divided, with some countries taking certain steps and other countries trying other steps. So there is no coordination and therefore no effective response to the crisis.
These people need shelter, they need sanitation, they need security, they need protection, they need so many different things. How do we rectify this? Is there a fair way?
Well, there must be a fair way. I'm not sure that's the one that will be pursued. Obviously, there is the possibility to accommodate these people, but there are two ways. One is to actually accommodate them and to try to resettle them, and I suspect that many will end up in temporary camps where treatment will be very bad and where there will be selection of those who are seen as genuine refugees as opposed to migrants. And then, you know, what we've seen in the past is a deportation policy in some cases to places in the Middle East and elsewhere that are deemed not dangerous because of armed conflict. The other one is to actually, for the European Union and the member states, to have a forward-looking policy toward doing something about the crisis in the Middle East that give rise to these refugee streams in the first place. And that is a very difficult and long-term challenge, but I haven't even seen the first steps toward it. All I've seen is more bombing of the Islamic State targets, but not really a political strategy about stemming these conflicts and trying to get political dialogue started in these countries between the various warring parties.
One of the publications, the Huffington Post, proposed a solution that Europe could use to try to convince countries in the path on the way to Europe to absorb more of these refugees, such as the Balkan states, etc. How realistic is it?
Well, I mean, this is actually standing policy already. It has always been European approach to the refugee crisis in the past that you keep refugees or keep people in the countries, don't let them become refugees in the first place. Then if they become and when they become refugees, keep them in the host countries that are still can serve as a buffer between the conflict countries and European states. So let it be Turkey, let it be Jordan or Lebanon, which has over 1 million Syrian refugees out of a total population of Lebanese citizens of 4 million, and then 500,000 of Palestinian refugees from earlier flows from Palestine. So that is a huge, huge burden that is going to burst at some point, of course, and that is why, in fact, we see so many people now flowing from these countries.
Joost Hilterman, Brussels-based program director for the Middle East and North Africa for the International Crisis Group, speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Still to come, train security tightened in Europe. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A new study suggests that getting regular exercise early in life may be important for adult health. Researchers at Vanderbilt University, using data from the Shanghai Women's Health Study, say they found that women who had exercised for more than 80 minutes per week as adolescents or participated in team sports had a lower risk of cancer and heart disease. The researchers say they believe the findings likely apply to boys as well. Meanwhile, in a new study by the American Cancer Society, researchers say they find that adult women who spend 6 hours or more sitting every day have a greater risk of multiple myeloma, ovarian, and breast cancer than women who sit for 3 hours or less. The data is drawn from a study of 77,000 women followed for 15 years. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. French prosecutors have charged a Moroccan national with premeditated attempted murder of a terrorist nature in connection with last week's attack on a high-speed French train. The formal charges against 25-year-old suspect Ayoub El-Khazani were filed Tuesday in Paris. Prosecutor François Molin says that Khazani boarded the train last Friday in Brussels, armed with an assault rifle and 270 rounds of ammunition, along with a Luger pistol, a bottle filled with gasoline, and a box cutter. He also said the suspect watched a radical Islamist video on his phone moments before he was confronted and subdued by three Americans and a Briton as he started walking through the train. The train attack is prompting efforts to tighten security across Europe's rail networks, which transport 40 million passengers each and every day. Lisa Bryant reports on the difficulties of making train travel safe.
The Gare du Nord, Europe's busiest train station. This is where the high-speed train from Amsterdam would have arrived Friday night if assailant Ayoub El-Khazani hadn't started firing on passengers before being tackled down. Military and police police are patrolling in small groups. But that's normal, especially since January's terrorist attacks in Paris. The French government has just announced random passenger checks on trains, but there's no other outward sign of stepped-up security since a train attack. Nicolas Ego is saying goodbye to his daughter, who's taking a train to northern France. Like other people interviewed here, he says he's not worried about another train attack.
Because what happened is a single event that could happen in many places, many different places. I mean, I think it's a single event, yes.
Daniel Kawata from Kinshasa took a Thalys train from Brussels, the same kind of train taken by assailant Khazani just a few days before. He says security officials were checking passengers' bags aboard.
This is the first time I see this kind of increase of security. It used to be like that. They will leave you on your own, and then they don't even know who are in the train. But now they want to make sure each and every area that there is no suspected travelers or so. It is helpful for us who are traveling because we feel comfortable.
Not everybody agrees. One German passenger who only gave his first name, Bernhard, is against tighter security.
I would say I don't like such security measurements. They make people calm, silent, but they don't are useful. So it's I personally can get rid of them.
The train attack has triggered a wider security debate in Europe. Experts say it's unfeasible to install airport-style metal detectors in stations like Gare du Nord, where hundreds of thousands of people pass through daily. Others are worried that spot checks on passengers can be discriminatory. Belgium's Prime Minister Charles Michel is calling for an urgent and broad review of rail security, especially when it comes to cross-border trains like Thalys, which pass through the Netherlands, Belgium, and France. All three countries are part of the passport-free Schengen zone. European Commission officials say more security is possible, but the free movement area is non-negotiable. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The top law enforcement official in the eastern U.S. state of Maryland issued the first formal state guidelines in the country, barring police from the arbitrary profiling of races and minorities. Maryland's guidelines, unveiled Tuesday by the state attorney general, will limit situations under which law enforcement can consider race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation during routine interactions with the public. The directive comes as a national debate intensifies about police treatment of minorities, particularly in America's larger cities, after a year of unrest spurred by a series of deadly confrontations between police and young Black males. British pop diva Rita Ora has a new CD coming out and a new song called Body on Me. It also features singer Chris Brown. International Edition colleague David Byrd spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the latest musical endeavor.
Maybe you know her from The X Factor in Britain. Maybe you know her from her Oscar-nominated performance. But Rita Ora is lighting up the pop charts with her new song and her new record. Larry, Rita is, she's got a long list of accomplishments.
Oh, yeah.
Not just pop music.
She's pretty hot right now, with, of course, judging on the TV show and endorsing all of these very well-known name brands throughout the UK. She's had, believe it or not, 6 top 5 hits. And of those, she's had 4 number ones in the UK. And she currently recorded a brand new duet with Chris Brown. The video came out this week. Her tour started in the U.S. this week. So she's been very, very busy here in America.
Now, this is, did she write this song that we're talking about? Or did she, is this a written by somebody else and she's just singing it?
Well, it was, I don't know who wrote it, but the song is directed by Colin Tilley, who has worked with Justin Timberlake and Kendrick Lamar, the video. And the song will appear on her upcoming new album. It doesn't say anywhere whether she wrote it or co-wrote it or had anything to do. She's not known for her writing skills, But she, of course, was nominated for a Billboard Award, Grammy Award with Iggy Azalea for Black Widow. A song from a year ago, and she's making a splash here in America. She's well established in the UK, but she's trying to get that same traction here in the US.
And now fans also, she's not hard to look at.
Not at
all.
She's
a very attractive young woman. She's got a tour going on. Where are some of the stops on her tour?
The tour begins this week here in the United States, San Francisco, Los Angeles, then Santa Ana, California, Las Vegas, Atlanta, Georgia, Boston, Massachusetts, here in Washington, D.C. in the middle of September, and hopefully I'll get her on border crossings.
Well, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. Well, if you have any comments about Rita Ora's latest single, the title of which is?
It's Body on Me.
The title of it is Body on Me. If you have any comments about that, you can send us a tweet. We're at VOAIE. You can also listen for Larry's program, Border Crossings, on our website. That's www.voanews.com.
Baby, let's cut down the lights. I just really want to let this fire burn bright. I'm just telling you to have an own.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news, information, and videos on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On August 18th, 82-year-old Khaled al-Assad, a prominent Syrian archaeologist and the head of antiquities for the ancient city of Palmyra for more than 40 years, was brutally murdered by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. In May 2015, ISIL seized control of Tadmor, which contains the historic ruins of the ancient city of Palmyra. Despite the danger that prevailed with ISIL's previous murderous acts and destruction of other cultural heritage sites, al-Assad remained in the city to protect its treasures and helped evacuate the city museum prior to ISIL's takeover. The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms this murder of a man who dedicated his life to preserving Syria's cultural treasures, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby. Like so many of ISIL's victims, his life and extraordinary work stand in stark contrast to that of his barbaric killers, he said. These attempts to erase Syria's rich history will ultimately fail. ISIL's damage and looting of historic sites in Syria and Iraq, which have been preserved for millennia, have not only destroyed irreplaceable evidence of ancient life and society, but have also helped fund its reign of terror inside those countries. Mr. Kirby said, as we respond to the brutality and suffering ISIL inflicts on the Syrian and Iraqi people, we continue to urge all parties in both countries and in the international community to deprive ISIL of this funding stream by rejecting the trafficking and sale of looted artifacts. All those who destroy important cultural property must be held accountable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.